The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
Welcome back to another episode of the Bastards of Boston Baseball. This is a new era of Red Sox baseball. Through every twist and turn, every major development, we are all on this journey together. This is going to be the most honest Sox podcast you're going to hear. No BS, just the truth. I'm your host, Charlie Smith, coming to you from Los Angeles, California. You can find me on Twitter /X at Smith_MLB. My other hosts for this episode are Jim Dalfino, coming to us from Shelton, Connecticut, and Terry Cushman, coming to us from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. Jim, how are you doing, and where can the fans find you?
Hey, how you doing? Yep, you can find me on Twitter. I'm doing good. We can find me on Twitter at JimSoxFan, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Excellent. And Terry, how are you doing? Where can the fans find you?
I am doing excellent as far as my life goes, but my baseball life sucks right now. And I can be found at Cushman MLB. The podcast account is at Bastards_Boston. This should have been a get right series for the Boston Red Sox. We were facing the lowly Minnesota Twins, who would normally be a last place team if the White Sox weren't in their division. But nonetheless, they were 8 games under 500 before we played them, and we just imploded, blew it. And in the standings right now, we're an even 500, 2 games back from the New York Yankees, game and a half out from the final wild card spot. So before we get started here, we're going to switch up the format this week, and we're going to do the bottom five, which is kind of the midweek format. But as we mentioned on social media, we're going to be having some format changes beginning Tuesday. We're basically going to come on after every game just to give a little bit of reaction and talk about the bigger issues that happened that day, whether they were during the game, roster related, throughout the day, injury related, all that. So we're basically going to be on after every single game except Saturday night games. We're not going to cover those because we all got better things to do on the weekend. And a Sunday morning drop, I don't think would be I don't think a lot of people would be tuning in for that. So every other night, we've got you covered. And some of the formats are going to be scrapped. You're still going to have hot takes once a week. Maybe we'll freestyle. It could be clown takes if that's more relevant. And as Charlie introduced Jim Dalfino onto the show, Jim is a permanent member of the crew now. He's not replacing anybody. I just felt with the new format, we could use one more person to just kind of bolster the roster and, have three hosts on every show. And bringing Jim on, an absolute no-brainer. So we're glad to have you. We're the heels on social media anyway. I don't think the audience gets it as much. I think only maybe 20% of our audience is really on Twitter. The rest of them found us through the apps, and so they don't see the daily brouhahas that we all go through. But go ahead, Charlie.
Yeah. So as you mentioned, Terry, we're going to have a little bit of a different format. So we have the bottom five for this series, changing it up a little bit. Typically, we did the studs and duds on this episode, but we're changing it up. So number five, Terry, why don't you hit us off with the first of five duds for this one?
So in the five spot this week, this is more of a teaser than an actual take, but we're going to go with Craig Breslow for bringing up Abraham Toro. Tristan Casas, got injured. We don't wish that on anybody, but he's not going to be on the roster. Perhaps you can find some positives in that in terms of winning, in terms of being more competitive and more dynamic. And I think a lot of us had higher hopes for what would happen as far as what type of move, but we got Abraham Toro. We didn't get Marcelo Meyer, who's killing it. We didn't get Roman Anthony, who's, had a pretty good, his metrics are off the charts, all the advanced stuff. His baseball savant is deep red from top to bottom, and he's not on the roster right now. So we'll get into that. We're the next episode, which will drop Tuesday morning, all about Tristan Casas, all about first base. Basically that. And Marcelo Meyer, Roman Anthony aren't going to be playing first base. Somebody else will, but there'll be moving parts in order to get them up. And that's the gist of it. But I think we're all disappointed with Abraham Toro, who was 0-for-1 this series in a pinch hit spot.
Yeah. Jim.
Yeah, I mean, as far as Toro's concerned, I mean, it's probably just one of those roster move configurations. They don't know what they want to do in the short and long term yet, so they just got to get a body up there to be on that roster. The problem with bringing anybody else up like a Meyer or even, Roman Anthony, again, it's a first base issue right now, but the reality is I don't think they want to purchase those contracts, put them on the 26, and then wind up having to start their clock as it relates to free agency. So I know there's some incentive for the team to actually do so. If you win Rookie of the Year, you're in the top three or five in MVP, but I don't think they want to start their clocks yet.
For me, I thought this would have been the prime opportunity to see, as I believe Terry had mentioned on a prior episode a little while ago, really your last opportunity to see what Vaughn Grissom can do if he can even play first base. We already know what Toro is. Toro is a sub 250 hitter that has little pop, will occasionally run into one. But I mean, if you look at Toro's numbers historically, you're not going to be blown away. And I think majority of, Red Sox fans that are looking at his numbers are going, that was the option you chose? This was the answer? The corresponding move to losing Tristan Casas? So I don't know. I'm a little bit, I guess, confused. We're bringing up a 28-year-old guy who's, he's a journeyman. He's played in Houston. He's played in Seattle, Milwaukee. Last year, he was in Oakland. He's not moving the needle for this team. Abraham Toro, if he's lucky, will get one, maybe two hits, and they're probably both going to be singles. He's probably going to strike out four times in that 12 at-bat set. So, I don't know. I was a little disappointed. To Jim's point, you have to start the clocks eventually. And I know there's concern for that. There hasn't always necessarily been the most logic with the decisions that have been made by the front office. But I think the decision to bring up Toro as opposed to Vaughn Grissom does create some questions. And one of them is, how serious are we going to take this? And I don't think that Toro was the best option for the call up with Casas being out for at least the next, 10 to 12 months. Anything else that you guys want to add?
Nothing to add.
Cool. Yeah. Number four, Hunter Dobbins. So Hunter Dobbins came up and, truth be told, his first game when he came up to us in early April, we had no expectations. That was the crazy game that he played in, Seattle, St. Louis ended up losing 18-7. His next game was against Chicago. One of the worst teams, if not the worst team in all of baseball, allowed one run earned on three hits in six innings. He struck out six. I felt pretty good about it. Third game allowed four runs on seven hits. Minnesota, much better team than Chicago. If you get, if you're horrible against Chicago, you have no place in baseball. And I figured, okay, cool, let's give him another chance. And I think this just kind of felt like this was just a guy who unfortunately was a little bit overmatched. He doesn't have the most experience in the bigs. Obviously, he's only been here for a cup of coffee, but we're limited on options with the fact that now Walker Buehler is going to be down indefinitely. I really don't know how long that injury is going to last, but somebody like Hunter Dobbins is probably going to see a lot of opportunities in the starting rotation because we have some glaring holes. So hopefully this is just a little bit of a blip on the radar and he's able to pick up where he left off against the Chicago White Sox. And this is just nothing more than a little blemish. Jim, why don't you go first and then we'll go to Terry.
So, I mean, the first two starts for Dobbins was pretty good. You know, I mean, obviously we didn't hear much about him in the minors, at least I haven't. So it was kind of a surprise call up. And I was actually pretty impressed with the first two outings. I mean, he obviously had the run support. So you are going to pitch a little bit differently. You're going to try maybe to pitch to contact. But, you know, it was one of those situations where how's he going to be once he has some adversity? You know, whether there's runners on or he's pitching behind or he's losing, you know, for the first five innings or four innings, he was pretty good. But, you know, it might be one of those things where he just started to get a little bit tired. You know, maybe the moment got to him a little bit. You know, if it wasn't for the Clemens homer, you know, maybe this is a different ball game. I'm not ready to give up on a guy like that yet, especially since, you know, it's been a little bit of a surprise. What is he long term? I don't know. It kind of really depends, like you said, too, how long we're going to be out with Buehler, Richard Fitz, too. I mean, we don't know really what's going on. We haven't heard anything about a rehab assignment upcoming yet. So there's some question marks there. You know, if he's going to be your number five guy, I'm good with it. You know, we need innings is really what it amounts to. You know, if he can be a guy that can give us a six-inning start every time he's out there, you know, I think, you know, water will seek its own level. And I think he'll be okay.
Terry.
Yeah, so I've kind of quietly been a little bit optimistic with Dobbins. I mean, he's got above average off speed stuff. And, you know, if he can get a little bit of life on that fastball, then, you know, who knows? I think there's potential he could be better than Cutter Crawford. And that's not the highest of bars, but it would make him a serviceable MLB pitcher. This wasn't the worst start. I mean, we've definitely seen worse starts, you know, from other pitchers. Houck has one of the worst I've ever seen. I think he gave up 11 to the Rays in that one outing. But Dobbins only allowed one base runner before the fourth inning. So his first three innings, pretty good. Gave up one run. And then, you know, he gave up a single to Byron Buxton in the fourth, double to Brooks Lee. And then things started getting a little bit more sideways after that in the fifth. And, you know, but he should have had more run support than that. Unfortunately, we've got a very streaky offense. We're number two in Major League Baseball right now in strikeouts. And that needs to change. And one hitting coach got fired today. I forget his name, but it's the Texas Rangers hitting coach. They got rid of him. Their pitching has been phenomenal this year. It's kind of been carrying them, but they've got a very bad run differential. So I don't know if, you know, maybe Peter Fatsy might have stuff on his mind, you know, as he, you know, hits the pillow tonight, but we're malfunctioning. And, you know, but again, Dobbins, not really the big problem in the grand scheme of things.
At the end of the day, you're totally right. I hope that this is one of the players that is able to fill that gap because, as you mentioned, we don't know when, you know, certain players are coming back. You know, we've talked about this before, and that can really be something that puts the nail in the coffin for some teams. But the Red Sox right now have to try to turn the page and move forward. moving forward, speaking of which, number three, we have Connor Wong. So, Jim, why don't you hit us with that?
So, obviously, he's back. He was injured. And what we didn't expect is the additional playing time of Nevaeh, right? I have been pretty impressed with Nevaeh. I don't think he's an all-star, but he seems to be calling a good game. He's not a complete failure at the plate. He has some pop. And the people that I talk to, they are pretty high on him. He comes back, and his offense is just not what he was able to do last year. I mean, you know, he was pretty much started the year batting around 300, 280 to 300 in the beginning of last season. This season's obviously a complete change. I think he was 0 for 15 with runners in scoring position, or 0 for 17. So he's really been a black hole in that lineup. And we've already got enough black holes with the way Casas was performing. Rafael has been, you know, okay. But you know, he's really been, a completely different player from last year. So I don't know what it is. I don't know if he's going to be given more opportunity, if he's going to be given some time at first or even second. I know he did a little bit last year there. But I think if Nevaeh can show a little bit more plate discipline, I think it could be a question that he could get the starting job.
Terry.
Like Jim said, I was kind of quietly becoming a very pro Narvaez guy. And with Wong being out, I really didn't miss him. You know, he got off to such a bad start, an uncharacteristically bad start. I mean, he hit over 300 for the better part of the first half of last season and was great. Strikeouts have been a bit of an issue. But he did have an 0 for 19 stretch, Connor Wong did, and 14 of those bats, he stranded a runner in scoring position. So you wonder, could we be, if you had someone more productive in that spot where he was slumping, perhaps maybe we've got a couple more wins up there, you know, whereas right now we're kind of falling at 500. So I didn't really miss Wong. It's kind of curious to see what could happen with him, because I don't think Alex Cora is in love with his defense. Carlos Narvaez is in the 100th percentile in terms of blocks. He is the most elite defensive catcher in Major League Baseball right now with a short sample size, but I was kind of teased there, and I wanted to see more, and we'll see what happens. Wong could be, we could get into it more next episode. He could be a super utility guy. He could play second or first in a pinch. Second is kind of spoken for with Campbell for the most part, except for when the manager wants David Hamilton in the lineup for some reason. But anyway, I think you can find ways to get Wong at bats, but not necessarily, you know, 4 out of 5 days at catcher. So we'll see. I didn't miss him, but is what it is.
You know, going into the series, coming back from an injury, 2 for 23, 7 strikeouts, no extra base hits, 2 for 7, the series, pair of strikeouts, 2 singles, 2 runs scored on the season, 4 for 30, hitting 133 with 2 runs scored, 4 singles, 3 walks, 9 strikeouts and a stolen base. So you score your first 2 runs on the season. Great. Both games, you score a run. You still have no extra base hits. You're not quite a black hole, but you're pretty darn close. So he probably is going to be super utility-wise if Narvaez ends up being the full-time catcher. Like, the Toronto game was really fun. Like, seeing him hit a rocket was great, because we haven't seen Connor Wong do that this year. And, you know, maybe there's still lingering issues with the injury. You know, 2 for 7, like, great, not bad. You matched your season total for hits. But at the end of the day, like, this isn't going to cut it. And we need to see more from somebody like Connor Wong if he's going to expect more regular at-bats, because there's a case right now to not give him those at-bats right now, and that's fair play. If you're not performing, you're not playing. It's a results-based business. the results aren't there, you're not going to get more opportunities to perhaps put up the same results. So the Red Sox have some options. This is one of the issues that they have, not to say this is the primary one, but one of a few. I hope that Connor Wong is able to come back at 100%, but truth be told, if you're a catcher, you're never at 100% ever under any circumstances. You're going to have broken fingers, bruised bones, torn muscles, pulled muscles, hamstring problems, whatever. We need you to be at least 75, 80%. If you're not there, you're not catching. You can't catch. And if the defense isn't there also, and that's a problem because your offense isn't there, there really isn't much of a point to have you behind the dish. So I'm hoping that Connor Wong can rectify that and do a little bit better. Terry, you brought up a point already. If defensively you're not a better option, what's the point? So something else to consider. He's definitely not going to be playing second base. If he can spell the first baseman, maybe that's an opportunity to give him a couple more at-bats, but there has to be a justified reason. Getting singles and not playing elite defense, I can't justify that right now. Anything else you guys want to add? Right on. Number two, Terry, who do you have?
Well, number two has to be Justin Slayton, and he's had a rough few outings here. He had literally one bad one for much of April. Where did he start getting sideways here? His last start on April, his last appearance, excuse me, on April 30th. So, in his 11 appearances before that, 10 of them were scoreless. And I don't know what the issue here is. I'd like to think it's a blip, and maybe that is all that it is, but he's in the last seven games, he's given, he's got a 7.11 ERA. He's walked, I think, six guys. Let's see, walked four, excuse me. Only six strikeouts, and he's been a punch out machine for a little over a year. He's been up with us. I think he was a Rule 5 guy with the Mets, and then we acquired him somehow. I think the Mets got him from the Rangers. We got him from the Mets. I forget how that all worked, but it was some impressive maneuvering from Breslow to get that. But you look at this bullpen right now, it's looking pretty mortal. And we're going to get into it a little bit more as the show goes on. But if you can't trust Justin Slayton, you're in bad shape. I mean, Liam Hendricks pitched twice in the series, was okay. But eventually Chapman is going to be Aroldis Chapman, and he's going to have his 3-week period where he can't locate. And so all the hype behind Slayton is that he could be the closer of the future. So I don't know what you do with him. Maybe you take him out of high leverage situations, let him kind of right the ship a little bit, let him settle back into a rhythm, and then maybe, you know, put him in there. Hendricks is doing fine, so just keep running him out there in the eighth or ninth whenever it makes sense, and perhaps perhaps you can get going. But, I mean, the bullpen was a lot of people's concern throughout the winter. I wasn't concerned with the lineup, and I think the lineup has been a huge problem, but we saw it in, what was it, 2022. You just can't win without a bullpen. If you can't hold those seventh, eighth, and ninth innings and runs are coming across the plate, you're going to blow leads. And you're going to tax your guys. So I don't know, but it's pretty concerning to see him struggle like that.
Jim.
You know, so, I mean, you think about a guy like Slayton beating a Rule 5 guy, right? He was a Rule 5 guy. You know, there's not many Rule 5 guys that turn out to be, you know, studs. I mean, we can make a case of Whitlock, but we'll get into him afterwards. I just, you know, there's reasons why other teams don't, you know, protect those guys and they let them become available. I'm not saying that he's going to be, a dud, but I mean, like, he's very disappointing. I think a lot of people were hoping, like Terry said, that he might be the closer of the future. They like his stuff. I've seen a couple appearances where he was absolutely nasty. I'm just worried that some of the teams are, you know, figuring him out. I mean, I think he was in that the game with the 3-3 tie. He came up and it came in and he gave up the double to Bader and a single to Larnick. But you know, it's if Cora keeps sending him out there in these critical times, whether it be the 7th or the 8th or even in the 9th, if he doesn't have the confidence or the command, it's going to be a struggle all season. I mean, he's right now, 0-3 with an ERA close to 7. And if it's going to be this tight in the AL East, you know, he's not effective right now. I hope he figures it out. I mean, it would be a great story, but I think he's doing more harm than good right now. And there may need to be the need to lay off of him a little bit more.
So Terry touched up on something. The zeros, 10 of 11 appearances, no runs allowed. The one outlier, Baltimore, who sometimes has had our number and sometimes not. 4 earned runs on 3 hits, a lot of walk, just didn't have it. And then after that, 8 straight appearances, only allowed 1 hit. Killing it. Absolutely on fire. Then you got the Toronto game. 2 walks, 1 run not earned, a hit, 1/3 of an inning. Next day, 3 runs on 3 hits, a home run, a walk, still not having it. Meanwhile, you're seeing an ERA jump from 3.48. We're almost at 6. And then this one, I don't get it. I want to say uncharacteristic, but his last 3 appearances, he's getting the clock cleaned here. 2 runs on 3 hits in an inning. It's not happening. And so the frustrating thing is we're winning this game and we're hoping, okay, please just, you know, preserve that one run lead. We haven't necessarily been a lockdown team when we have a one run lead. We've had a lot of blowouts this year, and that's probably accounting for a pretty healthy sample of the wins that we've had. Some of them have been obviously just insane. Like the St. Louis one was dumb. We've had games like that. A couple other teams have also had some wild blowouts, but they're able to hold it down in the 8th inning. The bullpen, which I credited last week as just being lights out, no runs, maybe 1 run allowed. I can't recall now. Absolutely lights out. But in the 3rd game, you can't trust the relievers to get it done. And Garrett Crochet's must win game of your rotation. He's supposed to be the automatic win. And then you just have to try to salvage the remaining 4 games, win 2, lose 2, whatever, because Garrett Crochet's game has to be a win. You lost the Crochet start. You've now added more pressure for the next 4 games. You now got to win 3 of the next 4 to try to keep up the pace here. Walker Buehler's not here. So you don't have a necessary benefit in the 2nd game of a 5-game set. That adds more pressure to your bullpen. Guys like Justin Slayton, Liam Hendricks, Aroldis Chapman, Weissert in there. Weissert had an incredible performance. They have to be almost locked down when Crochet doesn't win his start. I don't know how much more you're going to have to put Slayton in mop-up duty right now until he's 100%. Or you can't phantom IL him. You only have so many relieving options. And it's not like Crochet's going 8 innings every game and throwing 100 pitches. Crochet went 5 innings and threw almost 89 pitches in 5 innings. That's almost 20 pitches average per inning. I don't want my starters throwing more than 14, 15 per on the average. So after 6 innings, you should be around 90. If you're going to be stretching over 100, yeah, you should be close to 7 innings. We're averaging 20 right now. That hurts. You know, Slayton in 1 inning, 19 pitches. It's just not going to get the job done. You're throwing 75% strikes more than, and you're not striking anyone out. You're not scaring anybody. They're tagging you. And so similar to Wong, because Slayton hasn't been in the bigs for too long, is it possible that hitters now just know who Justin Slayton is? Is it possible that they just have a read on him? 3 straight starts or appearances, excuse me, he's allowed at least a run. At what point do we say, okay, maybe we don't put Slayton in when we're trying to preserve a 1-run lead? Just a thought, because it's not happening with him there. Hendricks should have pitched the eighth inning, right? And it's neither here nor there. You know, we can say one thing or another, but here's the thing. If Hendricks pitches the eighth, do we think that Justin Slayton is going to get the ninth? Do we think the result's still going to be the same? I don't know. It's just, it's really hard. But I mean, we're in the first week of May. We've already got a couple of holes on the boat. And when you got ducks on the pond, you got to knock them in. When you have a little bit of a lead, one run, two run lead, you have to figure out what to do to keep that one or two run lead. A one run lead is not safe with the Red Sox. A two run lead is not safe with the Red Sox. It's tough that after 36 games, we're 18-18. It's tough. It's really, really hard. Anything else you guys want to add to Slayton? You're muted, T.
How about now?
You're good, buddy.
Okay. I did have some type of a blip a minute ago, but I just want to be clear on one thing before we move on. I'm not panicking on him yet, but we don't know who Justin Slayton is. You know, it's been a year. It's been encouraging, but we don't know what his identity as a reliever is. And I think this is a baseball team in 2025 that has a major identity crisis going on. So we'll see, but I wouldn't put him in high leverage here in the next series and help it.
You can't put him in high leverage. Last year, 44 games, a 6-2 record, at a sub-3 ERA, 2.93, struck out 58 and 55 and a third, only 9 walks. No complaints. That's quality relief numbers from any guy. 44 appearances. This year, 14 appearances, 0-3 record, so already one more loss than all of last season. I get it. Pretty early year. 1.3 whip. Not pretty. Last year was 1.01, so not bad for a reliever. 6.57 ERA. We're more than double that. We're also not striking out 1 per 9, and I know that's one of those fun stats that gets you all warm and fuzzy, Terry. At least one strikeout per nine per inning. You like that. I know you like that in your K9 guys.
I'm a strikeout per nine guy.
Your K9 guy. And then the other one is the 5 walks. So we had a 6.4 strikeout to walk ratio. This year it's 1.8. It's Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde here. It feels like a different pitcher who's either not comfortable or Major League Baseball, with all their saber metrics, they have figured out Slayton. Because honestly, if Slayton gets shelled one more time, then what do you do? What if you're losing by 3 or 4 runs in a game, you bring in Slayton and he allows another 3? What is the immediate next response? I'm asking because I don't know.
A mop-up guy. At this rate, it's a mop-up guy. But yeah, he may have to get sent down, but I don't know. We need to see another week of him before we really start, you know.
Fair enough.
Trying to define anything.
Fair enough. Perfect. That'll bring us to number one. Jim, take us away.
So Garrett Whitlock, you know, again, here we go with the Rule 5 guys again. Garrett Whitlock, the starter, Garrett Whitlock, the reliever. This seemed like it was going to be the year that we were going to get our old Garrett Whitlock back, right? The guy that is the reliever. He said he wanted a relief. He didn't want to be a starter anymore. He's had some pretty good experiences out there, a couple good innings. But it's definitely lately has not been the old Whitlock that we felt was a lockdown. And again, to Charlie's point, with the way that Slayton has not been consistent, we can't have another guy out there that is inconsistent as well. I mean, at this point, Chapman's our best reliever. And, you know, I mean, it just doesn't seem like he's got a lot of conviction with the pitches right now. I'm not concerned long-term with him. But, you know, is there a small injury there that, you know, could creep up? You know how he can always be, you know, on the verge of some sort of injury. But, you know, I felt that he was the kind of guy that you needed to bring into a game that you were either tied or leading. Cora's brought him into a couple games that they were on the losing side. I didn't think that was smart. But if we can't rely on him in pressure situations, then we don't have Slayton. Where do you go from here? I mean, there's nobody that I think they can bring up to replace either one of those guys and be successful. So I'm really worried, you know. He was the type of guy that if he could get six innings out of a starter, have him come in for the seventh or eighth, you know, or six and seventh innings, and then try to piece together in front of Chapman. You know, you thought that the bullpen was going to be at least not a detriment. I mean, I can't believe I'm going to say this, but I'm missing Chris Martin. I'm almost missing Canley Jansen, even though he got whipped up, I think, this week. But yeah, I mean, it's, we don't have anybody that is consistent enough for that later innings. And, you know, is Bernardino going to be the guy he was when he first got here? It seems like the league kind of knows him now too. I'm worried, but we'll have to see, you know. I mean, what do you guys think?
I'm going to keep it brief because we got one show to do, but I'm about done with the two inning experiment here with Whitlock. The second inning is where he's getting in trouble. And it happened against Toronto, and then it happened this next time out against the Twins. And I don't want a two-day break. I don't want him having more than one off day. And so I'd stop messing with it and just give him one inning. But as far as the series goes, this series got lost today because Garrett Whitlock couldn't close out that second inning. And you know, he had a 3-1 lead, left the game while it was tied. So yeah, so that's my Whitlock take. I'm not a pessimist overall, but he's not being utilized the way he needs to be. Just go back to 2021. Just do what you did in 2021. And occasionally he did pitch a second inning, but primarily it was just one. Go back to that.
Yeah, real quick. If we're going to talk about Chris Martin, Canley Jensen right now is an ERA of almost six. He gave up six earned in 2/3 of an inning a couple days ago. But outside of that, he's been fine. Chris Martin is Chris Martin. You know, he's as automatic is. He's 39 years old. I'm thoroughly impressed that he's able to do what he's doing. Unfortunately, they're not here. So we can say we wish that we had this. We wish that we had that. I'm also done with the two inning experiment. I don't want any reliever going two innings. It doesn't make any sense. It doesn't help the team. You think that you're doing something, but seriously, at the end of the day, we're going to lose him the next day and the day after that in a game that we might need him and we can't use him because he's already pitched two plus innings and something like that. And sure, it'd be great if the experiment worked out. He did it four times to start the season. The first two, he did great. The next two, not so great. And so at that point, it's like, okay, cool. Why are we tinkering with this? Let's just do, like, this isn't having a, it's not like having a starter as a reliever. He's not a starter. He never should have been a starter. Should not be pitching two innings. Definitely not on a regular basis. You don't see closers pitching three innings. You don't see most relievers pitching more than an inning or an inning plus for whatever reason. They're coming in because the first reliever didn't get the job done. They finish the inning and somebody else comes out. That's just how, that's how it's working. But the Red Sox, in their infinite wisdom, seem to think, oh yeah, we figured it out. We're going to have a two inning guy. Guess what? It's not working. So if it ain't, if it's not working, you need to fix it. Any more two inning appearances from Garrett Whitlock is just brainless decisions because we are trying to either prove a point or we're just really not confident in some of the other guys that we have in our bullpen, which is part of it, I'm sure. But at the end of the day, not an excuse. Anything else you gents want to add? That will do it for this episode of The Bastards. Everyone have a great one. Take care.